Chapter 2. Saidine. Face expressionless, the Tuathuan woman stared at the banner as it drooped again, then turned her attention to those around the fire, especially the one reading, the one half again as tall as Perrin and twice as big.
"You have an ogier with you. I would not have thought..."
She shook her head.
"Where is Moraine Sedai?"
It seemed the dragon banner might as well not exist as far as she was concerned. Perrin gestured toward the rough hut that stood furthest up the slope at the far end of the bowl. With walls and sloping roof of unpeeled logs, it was the largest, though not very big at that. Perhaps just barely large enough to be called a cabin rather than a hut.
"That one is hers. Hers and Lan's. He is her warder.
When you have had something hot to drink..."
"No. I must speak to Moraine."
He was not surprised. All the women who came insisted on speaking to Moraine immediately and alone. The news that Moraine chose to share with the rest of them did not always seem very important, but the women held the intensity of a hunter stalking the last rabbit in the world for his starving family. The half-frozen old beggar woman had refused blankets and a plate of hot stew and tramped up to Moraine's hut, barefoot and still falling snow. Leah slid from her saddle and handed the reins up to Perrin.
"Will you see that she is fed?"
She patted the piebald mare's nose.
"Pisa is not used to carrying me over such rugged country."
"Fodder is scarce still," Perrin told her, "but she'll have what we can give her."
Leah nodded and went hurrying away up the slope without another word, holding her bright green skirts up, the blue-embroidered red cloak swaying behind her. Perrin swung down from his saddle, exchanging a few words with the men who came from the fires to take the horses. He gave his bow to the one who took stepper. No, except for one raven, they had seen nothing but the mountains and the Tuathuan woman. Yes, the raven was dead. No, she had told them nothing of what was happening outside the mountains. No, he had no idea whether they would be leaving soon.
"Or ever,"
he added to himself. Moraine had kept them there all winter. The Shinarans did not think she gave the orders, not here, but Perrin knew that Aes Sedai somehow always seemed to get their way, especially Moraine. Once the horses were led away to the rude log stable, the riders went to warm themselves. Perrin tossed his cloak back over his shoulders and held his hands out to the flames gratefully. The big kettle, Berlon work by the look of it, gave off smells that had been making his mouth water for some time already. Someone had been lucky hunting today, it seemed, and lumpy roots circled another fire close by, giving off an aroma faintly like turnips as they roasted. He wrinkled his nose and concentrated on the stew. More and more he wanted meat above anything else. The woman in men's clothes was peering toward Leah, who was just disappearing into Moraine's hut.
"What do you see, men?" he asked.
She came to stand beside him, her dark eyes troubled. He did not understand why she insisted on breeches instead of skirts. Perhaps it was because he knew her, but he could not see how anyone could look at her and see a too handsome youth instead of a pretty young woman.
"The tinker woman is going to die," she said softly, eyeing the others near the fires.
None was close enough to hear. He was still, thinking of Leah's gentle face.
"Ah, light. Tinkers never harm anyone."
He felt cold despite the warmth of the fire.
"Burn me, I wish I'd never asked."
Even the few Aes Sedai who knew of it did not understand what Min did. Sometimes she saw images and auras surrounding people, and sometimes she even knew what they meant. Masuto came to stir the stew with a long wooden spoon. The Shinaran eyed them, then laid a finger alongside his long nose and grinned widely before he left.
"Blood and ashes," Min muttered. "He's probably decided we are sweethearts murmuring to each other by the fire."
"Are you sure?" Perrin asked.
She raised her eyebrows at him, and he hastily added,
"About Leah."
"Is that her name? I wish I didn't know. It always makes it worse, knowing and not being able to..." "Perrin, I saw her own face floating over her shoulder, covered in blood, eyes staring. It's never any clearer than that."
She shivered and rubbed her hands together briskly.
"Light, but I wish I saw more happy things. All the happy things seem to have gone away."
He opened his mouth to suggest warning Leah, then closed it again. There was never any doubt about what Min saw and knew, for good or bad. If she was certain, it happened.
"Blood on her face," he muttered. "Does that mean she'll die by violence?"
He winced that he said it so easily. "But what can I do? If I tell Leah, if I make her believe somehow, she'll live her last days in fear, and it will change nothing."
Min gave a short nod. "If she's going to die by violence, it could mean an attack on the camp."
But there were scouts out every day, and guards set day and night, and Moraine had the camp warded, so she said. No creature of the Dark One would see it unless he walked right into it.
He thought of the wolves.
No.
The scouts would find anyone or anything trying to approach the camp.
"It's a long way back to her people," he said, half to himself. "Tinkers wouldn't have brought their wagons any further than the foothills. Anything could happen between here and there."
Min nodded sadly.
"And there aren't enough of us to spare even one guard for her, even if it would do any good."
She had told him. She had tried warning people about bad things when, at 6 or 7, she had first realized not everyone could see what she saw. She would not say more, but he had the impression that her warnings had only made matters worse when they were believed at all. It took some doing to believe in Min's viewings until you had proof.
"When?" he said.
The word was cold in his ears, and hard as tool steel.
"I can't do anything about Leah, but maybe I can figure out whether we're going to be attacked."
As soon as the word was out of his mouth, she threw up her hands. She kept her voice down, though.
"It isn't like that. I can never tell when something is going to happen. I only know it will. If I even know what I see means. You don't understand. The seeing doesn't come when I want it to, and neither does knowing. It just happens, and sometimes I know. Something. A little bit. It just happens."
He tried to get a soothing word in, but she was letting it all out in a flood he could not stem.
"I can see things around a man one day and not the next, or the other way round. Most of the time I don't see anything around anyone. Aes Sedai always have images around them, of course, and warders, though it's always harder to say what it means with them than with anyone else."
She gave Perrin a searching look, half squinting.
"A few others always do, too."
"Don't tell me what you see when you look at me," he said harshly,
then shrugged his heavy shoulders. Even as a child, he had been bigger than most of the others, and he had quickly learned how easy it was to hurt people by accident when you were bigger than they. It had made him cautious and careful, and regretful of his anger when he let it show.
"I am sorry, Min. I shouldn't have snapped at you. I did not mean to hurt you."
She gave him a surprised look.
"You didn't hurt me. Blessed few people want to know what I see. The light knows I would not, if it were someone else who could do it."
Even the Aes Sedai had never heard of anyone else who had her gift. Gift was how they saw it, even if she did not.
"It's just that I wish there was something I could do about Leah. I couldn't stand it the way you do, knowing and not able to do anything."
"Strange,"
she said softly.
"How you seem to care so much about the Tuathuan. They are utterly peaceful, and I always see violence around—"
He turned his head away, and she cut off abruptly.
"Tuathuan?"
came a rumbling voice, like a huge bumblebee.
"What about the Tuathuan?"
The Ogier came to join them at the fire, marking his place in his book with a finger the size of a large sausage. A thin streamer of tobacco smoke rose from the pipe in his other hand. His high-necked coat of dark brown wool, buttoned up to the neck and flared at the knee, overturned down boot tops. Perrin stood hardly as high as his chest. Loyal's face had frightened more than one person, with his nose broad enough almost to be called a snout and his too wide mouth. His eyes were the size of saucers, with thick eyebrows that dangled like mustaches almost to his cheeks, and his ears poked up through long hair and tufted points. Some who had never seen an Ogier took him for a Trolloc, though Trollocs were as much legend to most of them as Ogier. Loyal's wide smile wavered, and his eyes blinked as he became aware of having interrupted them. Perrin wondered how anyone could be frightened of the Ogier for long.
Yet some of the old stories call them fierce and implacable as enemies.
He could not believe it. Ogier were enemies to no one. Min told Loyal of Leah's arrival, but not of what she had seen. She was usually close-mouthed about these seeings, especially when they were bad. Instead, she added, "You should know how I feel, Loyal, suddenly caught up by Aes Sedai and these two rivers folk." Loyal made a noncommittal sound, but Min seemed to take it for agreement.
"Yes," she said emphatically. "There I was, living my life in Berlon as I liked it, when suddenly I was grabbed up by the scruff of the neck and jerked off to the light knows where."
"Well, I might as well have been. My life has not been my own since I met Moraine. And these Two Rivers farm boys." She rolled her eyes at Perrin, a wry twist to her mouth.
"All I wanted was to live as I pleased, fall in love with the man I chose."
Her cheeks reddened suddenly, and she cleared her throat.
"I mean to say, what is wrong with wanting to live your life without all this upheaval?"
"Tarviren,"
Loyal began. Perrin waved at him to stop, but the ogre could seldom be slowed, much less stopped, when one of his enthusiasms had him in its grip. He was accounted extremely hasty by the ogre way of looking at things. Loyal pushed his book into a coat pocket and went on, gesturing with his pipe.
"All of us, all of our lives, affect the lives of others, Min. As the wheel of time weaves us into the pattern, the life thread of each of us pulls and tugs at the life threads around us. Tarviren are the same, only much, much more so. They tug at the entire pattern, for a time at least, forcing it to shape around them. The closer you are to them, the more you are affected personally. It's said that if you were in the same room with Utter Hawkwing, you could feel the pattern rearranging itself. I don't know how that is true, but I've read that it was. But it doesn't only work one way. Tarviren themselves are woven to a tighter line than the rest of us, with fewer choices."
Perrin grimaced. "Bloody few of the ones that matter." Min tossed her head.
"I just wish they didn't have to be so bloody Tarviren all the time. Tarviren tugging on one side and Aes Sedai meddling on the other? What chance does a woman have?"
Loyal shrugged.
"Very little, I suppose, as long as she stays close to Tarviren."
"As if I had a choice," Min growled.
"It was your good fortune, or misfortune, if you see it that way, to fall in with not one, but three Tarviren. Rand, Matt, and Perrin. I myself count it very good fortune, and would even if they weren't my friends. I think I might even—"
The ogre looked at them, suddenly shy, his ears twitching.
"Promise you will not laugh. I think I might write a book about it. I have been taking notes."
Min smiled, a friendly smile, and Loyal's ears pricked back up again.
"That's wonderful," she told him. "But some of us feel as if we're being danced about like puppets by these Tarviren."
"I didn't ask for it," Perrin burst out. "I did not ask for it."
She ignored him.
"Is that what happened to you, Loyal? Is that why you travel with Moraine? I know you ogier almost never leave your steading. Did one of these Tarviren tug you along with him?"
Loyal became engrossed in a study of his pipe.
"I just wanted to see the groves the ogier planted,"
he muttered.
"Just to see the groves."
He glanced at Perrin as if asking for help, but Perrin only grinned.
"Let's see how the shoe nails onto your hoof."
He did not know all of it, but he did know Loyal had run away. He was 90 years old, but not yet old enough by ogier standards to leave the steading. Going outside, they called it, without the permission of the elders. Ogier lived a very long time, as humans saw things. Loyal said the elders would not be best pleased when they put their hands on him again. He seemed intent on putting that moment off as long as possible. There was a stir among the Shinarans, men getting to their feet. Rand was coming out of Moraine's hut. Even at that distance, Perrin could make him out clearly, a young man with reddish hair and gray eyes. He was of an age with Perrin, and would stand half a head taller if they were side by side, though Rand was more slender, if still broad across the shoulders. Embroidered golden thorns ran up the sleeves of his high-collared red coat, and on the breast of his dark cloak stood the same creature as on the banner, the four-legged serpent with the golden mane. Rand and he had grown up together as friends.
Are we still friends? Can we be, now?
The Shinarans bowed as one, heads held up but hands to knees.
Lord Dragon, Uno called. We stand ready. Honor to serve.
Uno, who could hardly say a sentence without a curse, spoke now with the deepest respect. The others echoed him.
Honor to serve.
Massima, who saw ill in everything, and whose eyes now shone with utter devotion. Ragan. All of them awaiting a command, if it were Rand's pleasure to give one. From the slope, Rand stared down at them a moment, then turned and disappeared into the trees.
He has been arguing with Moraine again, Min said quietly. All day, this time.
Perrin was not surprised, yet he still felt a small shock. Arguing with an Aes Sedai. All the childhood tales came back to him. Aes Sedai, who made thrones and nations dance to their hidden strings. Aes Sedai, whose gift always had a hook in it, whose price was always smaller than you could believe, yet always turned out to be greater than you could imagine. Aes Sedai, whose anger could break the ground and summon lightning. Some of the stories were untrue, he knew now, and at the same time they did not tell the half.
I had better go to him, he said. After they argue, he always needs someone to talk to.
And aside from Moraine and Lan, there were only the three of them, Min, Loyal, and him, who did not stare at Rand as if he stood above kings. And of the three, only Perrin knew him from before. He strode up the slope, pausing only to glance at the closed door of Moraine's hut. Leah would be in there, and Lan. The warder seldom let himself get far from the Aes Sedai's side. Rand's much smaller hut was a little lower down, well hidden in the trees, away from all the rest. He had tried living down among the other men, but their constant awe drove him off. He kept to himself now, too much to himself to Perrin's thinking. But he knew Rand was not headed to his hut now. Perrin hurried on to where one side of the bowl-shaped valley suddenly became sheer cliff, 50 paces high and smooth, except for tough brush clinging tenaciously here and there. He knew exactly where a crack in the gray wall lay, an opening hardly wider than his shoulders. With only a ribbon of late afternoon light overhead, it was like walking down a tunnel. Half a mile the crack ran, abruptly opening out into a narrow vale, less than a mile long, its floor covered with rocks and boulders, and even the steep slopes were thickly forested with tall leather leaf and pine and fir. Long shadows stretched away from the sun sitting on the mountaintops. The walls of this place were unbroken, save for the crack, and as steep as if a giant axe had buried itself in the mountains. It could be even more easily defended by a few than the bowl, but it had neither stream nor spring. No one went there, except Rand, after he argued with Moraine. Rand stood not far from the entrance, leaning against the rough trunk of a leather leaf, staring at the palms of his hands. Perrin knew that on each there was a heron, branded into the flesh. Rand did not move when Perrin's boot scraped on stone. Suddenly Rand began to recite softly, never looking up from his hands.
Twice and twice shall he be marked, twice to live and twice to die. Once the heron to set his path, twice the heron to name him true. Once the dragon for remembrance lost, twice the dragon for the price he must pay.
With a shudder, he tucked his hands under his arms.
But no dragons yet, he chuckled roughly. Not yet.
For a moment, Perrin simply looked at him. A man who could channel the one power. A man doomed to go mad from the taint on Saidin, the male half of the true source, and certain to destroy everything around him in his madness. A man, a thing, everyone was taught to loathe and fear from childhood. Only, it was hard to stop seeing the boy he had grown up with. How do you just stop being somebody's friend? Perrin chose a small boulder with a flat top and sat waiting. After a while, Rand turned his head to look at him.
Do you think Matt is all right? He looked so sick the last time I saw him.
He must be all right by now. He should be in Tarvalin by now. They'll heal him there. And Nynaeve and Egwene will keep him out of trouble.
Egwene and Nynaeve, Rand and Matt and Perrin. All five from Emmons Field and the Two Rivers. Few people had come into the Two Rivers from outside, except for occasional peddlers and merchants once a year to buy wool and tobacco. Almost no one had ever left. Until the wheel chose out its Tavirin, and five simple country folk could stay where they were no longer. Could be what they had been no longer. Rand nodded and was silent.
Lately, Perrin said, I find myself wishing I was still a blacksmith. Do you wish you were still just a shepherd?
Duty, Rand muttered.
Death is lighter than a feather, duty heavier than a mountain. That's what they say in Shinar.
The Dark One is stirring, the last battle is coming, and the dragon reborn has to face the Dark One in the last battle, or the shadow will cover everything. The wheel of time broken. Every age remade in the Dark One's image. There's only me.
He began to laugh mirthlessly, his shoulders shaking. I have the duty because there isn't anybody else now, is there?
Perrin shifted uneasily.
The laughter had a raw edge that made his skin crawl. I understand you were arguing with Moraine again. The same thing?
Rand drew a deep, ragged breath.
Don't we always argue about the same thing? They're down there, on Almuth Plain, and the light alone knows where else. Hundreds of them. Thousands. They declared for the Dragon Reborn because I raised that banner. Because I let myself be called the Dragon. Because I could see no other choice. And they're dying. Fighting, searching, and praying for the man who was supposed to lead them. Dying. And I sit here safe in the mountains all winter. I owe them something.
You think I like it? Perrin swung his head in irritation.
You take whatever she says to you, Rand grated. You never stand up to her.
Much good it has done you, standing up to her.
You have argued all winter, and we have sat here like lumps all winter. Because she is right.
Rand laughed again, that chilling laugh.
The light burned me, she is right. They are all split up into little groups all over the plain, all across Taraban and Ara-Doman. If I join any one of them, the White Cloaks and the Domani army, and the Taraboners, will be on top of them like a duck on a beetle.
Perrin almost laughed himself in confusion.
If you agree with her, why in the light do you argue all the time? Because I have to do something, or I'll burst like a rotted melon.
Do what? If you listen to what she says...
Rand gave him no chance to say they would sit there forever.
Moraine says!
Rand jerked erect, squeezing his head between his hands.
Moraine has something to say about everything. Moraine says I mustn't go to the men who are dying in my name. Moraine says I'll know what to do next because the pattern will force me to it. Moraine says! But she never says how I'll know. Oh no, she doesn't know that!
His hands fell to his sides and he turned toward Perrin, head tilted and eyes narrowed.
Sometimes I feel as if Moraine is putting me through my paces like a fancy Tyran stallion, doing his steps. Do you ever feel that?
Perrin scrubbed a hand through his shaggy hair.
Whatever is pushing us, or pulling us, I know who the enemy is, Rand.
Balzamon, Rand said softly.
An ancient name for the Dark One. In the Trolloc tongue, it meant Heart of the Dark.
And I must face him, Perrin.
His eyes closed in a grimace, half smile, half pain.
Light help me. Half the time I want it to happen now, to be over and done with, and the other half... How many times can I manage to... Light, it pulls at me so. What if I can't... What if I...
The ground trembled.
Rand?
Perrin said worriedly. Rand shivered. Despite the chill, there was sweat on his face. His eyes were still shut tight.
Oh, light, he groaned. It pulls so.
Suddenly the ground heaved beneath Perrin and the valley echoed with a vast rumble. It seemed as if the ground was jerked out from under his feet. He fell, or the earth leaped up to meet him. The valley shook as though a vast hand had reached down from the sky to wrench it out of the land. He clung to the ground while it tried to bounce him like a ball. Pebbles in front of his eyes leaped and tumbled, and dust rose in waves.
Rand!
His bellow was lost in the grumbling roar. Rand stood with his head thrown back, his eyes still shut tight. He did not seem to feel the thrashing of the ground that had him now at one angle, now at another. His balance never shifted, no matter how he was tossed. Perrin could not be certain, being shaken as he was, but he thought Rand wore a sad smile. The trees flailed about, and the leatherleaf suddenly cracked in two, the greater part of its trunk crashing down not 3 paces from Rand. He noticed it no more than he noticed any of the rest. Perrin struggled to fill his lungs.
Rand! For the love of the light! Rand! Stop it!
As abruptly as it had begun, it was done. A weakened branch cracked off of a stunted oak with a loud snap. Perrin got to his feet slowly, coughing. Dust hung in the air, sparkling motes in the rays of the setting sun. Rand was staring at nothing now, chest heaving as if he had run 10 miles. This had never happened before, nor anything remotely like it.
Rand, Perrin said carefully. What?
Rand still seemed to be looking into a far distance.
It is always there, calling to me, pulling at me. Sidene. The male half of the true source. Sometimes I can't stop myself from reaching out for it.
He made a motion of plucking something out of the air and transferred his stare to his closed fist.
I can feel the taint even before I touch it. The dark one's taint, like a thin coat of vileness trying to hide the light. It turns my stomach, but I cannot help myself. I cannot! Only sometimes I reach out and it's like trying to catch air.
His empty hand sprang open, and he gave a bitter laugh.
What if that happens when the last battle comes? What if I reach out and catch nothing?
Well, you caught something that time, Perrin said hoarsely.
What were you doing?
Rand looked around as if seeing things for the first time. The fallen leather leaf and the broken branches. There was, Perrin realized, surprisingly little damage. He had expected gaping rents in the earth. The wall of trees looked almost whole.
I did not mean to do this.
It was as if I tried to open a tap and instead pulled the whole tap out of the barrel.
It filled me. I had to send it somewhere before it burned me up, but I did not mean this.
Perrin shook his head. What use to tell him to try not to do it again? He barely knows more about what he's doing than I do. He contented himself with,
There are enough who want you dead, and the rest of us, without you doing the job for them.
Rand did not seem to be listening.
We had best get on back to the camp. It will be dark soon, and I don't know about you, but I'm hungry.
What? Oh, you go on, Perrin. I will be along. I want to be alone again a while.
Perrin hesitated, then turned reluctantly toward the crack in the valley wall. He stopped when Rand spoke again.
Do you have dreams when you sleep? Good dreams?
Sometimes, Perrin said warily. I don't remember much of what I dream.
He had learned to set guards on his dreaming.
There are always dreams, Rand said,
so softly Perrin barely heard.
Maybe they tell us things, true things.
He fell silent, brooding.
Supper's waiting, Perrin said, but Rand was deep in his own thoughts.
Finally, Perrin turned and left him standing there.